Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge. This is your latest Manchester United transfer news. Hope you're all doing well today. Lots to get into. What is the latest with Matheus Fernandes? Big story coming in last night about Tottenham agreeing personal terms. We've reacted to that. What comes next? Also, should Somerville be coming next to Manchester United? I think not. Let's have that debate. But look, the reality is Manchester United want Matheus Fernandes and potentially want another midfielder. If those things don't happen, what do Man United do? Well, there is a new plan, whether you like it or not. We are again this morning with the Sunday news linked to Enmecha from Dortmund. Alex Scott still remains a possibility as well. I don't want to say the word, but you know that Brighton player is still available as well. And United still dream of Tchouaméni. And there is still a market where there's a very good Moroccan midfielder called Boadi is available as well. So other options exist. Will Man United pivot or will they stick or will they have to pivot if they miss out? We'll talk some of those stories this morning, of course. We've also got some stuff around the left back and the striker situation. Barcelona linked by Marca to Sesco this morning, by the way. I mean, I think I'd like to file that under Bullshit of the Day award, but we can discuss that if we get time. Also need to show you the hotter meter. We've not shown you that for a while as well either. But look, the sun is shining. It's the weekend. I hope you're doing very well. And look, I think just dealing briefly with Matheus Fernandes, United, I still think, get that deal done. I mean, I don't have any inside information that we're definitely going to get it done. Until we actually decide to bid, we can walk. I think if United bid, they will get the deal done. If they don't bid, then maybe they will walk. As I said, if Tottenham can get personal terms agreed with the player, it probably causes an issue where I'd be a little bit concerned that we might walk away because we don't want to be in a bidding war. But the great thing about Man United, and this is a positive around Matheus Fernandes, is that we are hypocrites. I don't trust anything that comes out of that club. So when they say they'll only pay what they want, they won't go for players that don't just want them, and they won't get involved in bidding wars, well, I think they will get involved in a bidding war for Matheus Fernandes if he agrees terms with Spurs. I think we will pay more than we wanted to pay for Matheus Fernandes. And I think we'll end up, contradicting our own stance. So I'm not worried. I think that, look, in an ideal world, he'll only say he wants Man United, we'll negotiate the price down and he will sign for United and there'll be no bidding war. But I actually do think if Spurs do push it, that we will get involved in it because it's about saving face. And technically, we did get involved in a bidding war for Sesco anyway. So again, the hypocrisy of the club to say that they don't do bidding wars and they don't go for players that want to go to other clubs or are interested in other clubs. Well, Sesco was very much about that. So, you know, I'm not too concerned about it. Let's talk about midfielders, though. I do want to talk about Somerville. I want to get into some things extra as well. Couple of stories this morning, one coming in from Germany linking Man United to Enmecha again, a couple of other outlets as well. We are and have been linked to him before. I think that we have to be very, very careful. I mean, we're on safe ground with this, I think. I think most of you are intelligent people, most. But we're not linked to Enmecha because he played well for Germany in the World Cup last night. I mean, I really want to avoid that moronic take because we're seeing it with Somerville. We're not linked to Enmecha because he played well against the Ivory Coast last night. We're linked to him because it's a player that's been on our list for a few months. he's an interesting player. I mean, look, what I would say about Emeeta is I think if we signed him, a lot of people wouldn't be particularly excited by it. But I think I'd actually be more confident in him succeeding than Edison. And I'm not saying that Edison won't succeed, but if we signed Emeeta, I think he would be more of a success than Edison. I think he is. Well, look, he's on Mourinho's list for Real Madrid. Like he is a good player. And you know, maybe watching him against Germany is the first time you've thought he was a good player, but he's been a good player for a long time. And he is a player that United appreciates. Whether we'll progress on that, I don't know at what stage you do, because for me, he would be the Edison alternative when we've gone for Edison. He can't be the Matheus Fernandes alternative, and you can't sign Edison, Fernandes, and then Emeeta, because that just doesn't make sense as a three either. So I don't know where a player like him would come into play. United have certainly looked at him, and we are linked to him again this morning. What I would say is, logically, I can't see how that deal happens in any way, shape or form, because you're not going to sign Edison and Emeeta and Tchouaméni, because they're all three non-Premier League players. You're not going to sign Emeeta, Matheus Fernandes and Edison. So I don't know where he would fit in with United, unless we're sort of going, well, let's see what Real Madrid do. Because if Real Madrid go for Enzo and we don't get Matheus Fernandes, then they won't go for Emeeta and we can go there. It maybe he's a backstop if all else fails. And maybe we will have to, worst case scenario, and I don't want to discuss it in any depth. Worst case scenario, we don't get Matheus Fernandes. Worst case scenario, Tchouaméni doesn't leave Real Madrid. Worst case scenario, Alex Scott signs for Liverpool or Arsenal. We're going to have to do something. So, maybe that's why the links are there. And I also think that there'll be a lot of United fans that do not want to acknowledge this, but worst case scenarios are sometimes something United are attracted to. If you don't get Alex Scott, if you don't get Matheus Fernandes, if you don't get Bouadi, if you don't get Tchouaméni, where are we going for these last two midfielders? So look, plan F, G and H, definitely, but maybe that's where Emeeta is, and maybe if things go wrong, that's where it could end up. So keep an eye on that. I don't think it'll happen, but look, certainly somebody we've looked at in the past and somebody I think is actually very good. I think he'd be perfect for the Premier League, in fact. Somebody I would be much happier for is going for is Alex Scott. Now, don't sleep on Alex Scott to Manchester United. This is a player that United have quite comfortably to confirm. They're quite comfortable confirming that he is a player of interest. This benefits United in multiple ways because it's a good, exciting player that the fan base will like. But if he does sign for Arsenal or Liverpool, they can just say, well, it was a player that we looked at and we decided not to go for. So Man United are more than happy. And it has been out even this week with David Ornstein and others as well. Alex Scott is definitely a player of interest for Manchester United. Are we going to move forward on that? Well, as we know, Bournemouth are desperate to get him to sign a new contract and put a release clause in there. As we know, Arsenal and Liverpool are monitoring the situation as well. I think for Manchester United, Alex Scott at the moment, look, there was an article this morning saying that United are ready to pounce. We were ready to pounce on Elliot Anderson and we never did anything about it. We were ready to pounce on Tonali and we've not done anything about it. We're ready to pounce on Lewis Hall. I don't think we'll do anything about it. So ready to pounce for Manchester United. Well, you could argue a stone statue of a lion is ready to pounce. It's never going to pounce, but it looks like it might because it's a lion going like that. I would say Man United ready to pounce is probably less likely than that stone lion statue, to be honest with you. But apparently we are ready to pounce. I think so much of this does rest on, and I don't want to be the bearer of bad news this morning, but I think we all know all this ready to pounce, monitoring other players, etc., etc. I think it absolutely does come down to Matheus Fernandes. And whilst I don't want to go back talking about what happened last night, and if you missed last night's show, basically Matti Meretto, who is a journalist who works with Romano and others, basically said that Spurs are very close to agreeing personal terms with Matheus Fernandes and he's open to joining Tottenham. That update, if true, potentially causes us problems. But Alex Scott
and Mecha and any other midfielder, I just don't think we're moving on them until the conclusion of the Matias Fernandez deal. And that conclusion could be as missing out. Acknowledge that, certainly. But that conclusion could be a month of talks like it was with Mbeumo. It could be. So as frustrating as it is, it's something we're well versed in. We're sort of doing one deal at a time again. And we're stuck in that avenue of, when are we going to get a conclusion on this? I'll be honest with you. I'm sort of conflicted. If I knew United were going to go for this deal no matter what, and I think they are, I'm sort of hopeful Spurs bid tomorrow or today, because that's sort of what got the Sesko deal done. Newcastle being quite aggressive in trying to get him forced us to move quicker. So I'm sort of hoping that Spurs do make a bid. The risk is, if Spurs make a bid and we walk away and we don't get him at all. So, but look, we're not in control. We never are in control. The situation with United at the moment is, yes, there are other targets. Alex Scott, we could move on, certainly. But we're not going to until the conclusion of this Matias Fernandez deal. And when you look at Mbeumo last year, that went on for 6 weeks. We're not even 3 weeks, I think, into this Matias Fernandez story. So we could have another 3 weeks of this, where we don't do any other deal whilst we wait on this. So that's why I'm sort of thinking Spurs putting a bid in might actually move things quicker for us. So look, I know that's not the update everybody wants, but we do need to see the conclusion of this Matias Fernandez deal before we start moving on others, because we are a club that, whether you like it or not, only does one deal at a time. Do I think United are panicked at the moment? No, I think they are the self-proclaimed relaxed football club in the transfer window. And I suspect that privately they have been given an indication that the player does prefer them. But, you know, whether he prefers us or not, I'd prefer the deal to move a little bit quicker. And there was a very interesting update from Simon Stone about this actually as well. West Ham, under David Gold, who's now left as their CEO, probably would have done this deal quite quickly. The new guy that's come in actually wants to invest in the club. So he probably wouldn't be blind to the fact that these players want to leave, but isn't necessarily in a rush for it to happen. So I don't think West Ham are in a rush. I don't think we're in a rush.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And we don't agree on the fee. So, you know, ultimately, it's the frustration that we can't work on more than one deal at once. And we never have. So if this is locked and, you know, going to take time, then we're not going to pivot towards anything else either. And that's the problem. We're just very slow at working on transfers. So I think that maybe that's why some of you are excited about Somerville, because whilst we're talking to West Ham about Fernandez, we could almost kill two birds with one stone and sign Somerville as well, because we're already in conversation. And the efficiency of that, I completely understand. Like, you know, if we go and buy a left winger or a forward from somewhere else, you've got to start, not David Gold, David Sullivan. I'm not a West Ham fan, so I really don't give a shit about what names I'm getting right or wrong on that. You know what I meant. The point is, they've got a new investor in, they've got a new CEO. If you're a West Ham fan, apologies. This is the United Stand. I'm not really bothered about your technical team or your directors or anything like that. What I am bothered about is what Man United are doing in the transfer window. And if we go and buy or look to buy a winger or a striker from another club, you start from ground zero again. If you're already talking to West Ham about Fernandez and then you're talking to them about Somerville as well, it might speed things up a little bit there as well. So maybe that's why some people are quite excited about that. And I must acknowledge that the efficiency of Somerville will be quicker than going for somebody else as well. In relation to Somerville, I do want to just run a poll on this, because there's a, you know what? This happens every World Cup and every Euros, and you put the warning signs out, and still people do it. So would you be happy with Somerville? Yes or no if you're watching live. If you're not, get your comments in. Let me know why you would like Somerville or why you wouldn't. Because yes or no is a bit boring, isn't it? In relation to Somerville, right, it's a little bit like having a lake in Australia, right? And it's a hot day and it's your lake, and you put a big sign saying, please don't swim. It's got to be shorter than that. Beware crocodiles in the lake, yeah? Crocodiles could live in that lake. Don't go swimming in it. Beware crocodiles in lake, no swimming, yeah? People will still fucking swim in it. They will. That's just human nature. The sign is there. It's all the way around the lake. People will still swim in the lake. And you sort of like go, I can't believe they've done that. When the sign says, don't do it, they'll still do it, right? People will still scout players in a World Cup. They'll still do it. They'll watch a player in the World Cup and they'll go, we should sign them. Even though anybody who knows anything about football knows international football is a bubble. These players only get together for a couple of weeks. So the tactics and the formations and the systems are, you know, not as solid as they are if you play in a club team. And also it's slower than club football. But you will still get people who spot a player and go, we should sign them for Man United. There was a lad in the Ivory Coast midfield yesterday, not Kessie, not Sangare, I forget his name. And people were going, we should be signing him for Man United. And you're like, oh my God. And you know where I'm going with this. Somerville scores a good goal yesterday. We should sign him. Now, the people who say we should sign him before the World Cup, respect. But people were saying last week, don't sign Somerville. The same people are going, we should sign Somerville because he scored a good goal last night in the World Cup. And it's like, that to me terrifies me. It's Karol Poborski FC, if anyone's old enough, right? It's like, do not sign players because they score a good goal in the World Cup. Poborski literally scored a world-class goal in the Euros with a little chip. Absolute waste of money. Never should have done it. Do I want to sign Somerville? No. I don't think he's that good. I really don't. I think he's okay. I don't think he's as good as people think he is. I think that also, at what point are we going to stop signing people like Somerville? For me, it's just another Cunha. It's another Mbeumo. Nothing wrong with those players. Nothing wrong with those players. But they're a certain type of player in their mid-20s who've done well for lower Premier League level clubs. I don't think keeping buying players like that is going to take us to a title. It can work. You know, Cunha looks like a very good player. And hopefully Mbeumo will be as well. But how many more West Ham and Wolves and you know, both those teams have been relegated as well. How many more players from that level are we going to buy? Now, I've got a problem with Matheus Fernandes because I think he's going to be a player that, you know, Real Madrid want him. I think he's going to be a top, top class player. But how many more players are we going to buy around 50, 60 million pounds because they're cheap? And Somerville is at least the plan D for Man United as well. Plan A was Semenyu. Plan B was Diamande. Plan C was Morgan Rogers. And now we're down to plan D as well. Now, look, I completely accept that if we sign him, I'll back him because plan D is better than plan E. And it's better than plan nothing. But let's not try and pretend that this signing, if we make it, is something that the club originally planned. They've already publicised themselves that he's a plan D signing. So apologies, I'm not massively excited about signing Somerville. So when I see people out there going, oh, he's perfect for Man United. Oh, this player's a superstar in the making. Oh, this player, right? This player. And I'm sort of like, okay, I hope he does really well. But I think from a recruitment point of view, it's absolutely shit. Because in the space of 6 months, we've gone from Semenyu to Diamande to Rogers to Somerville. And this is my problem with this board. I'm tired. I'm actually bored of this board not delivering our manager the plan A and B options he needs to try and close the gap on Man City and Arsenal. And I'm tired of watching Man City and Arsenal go out and get plan A and plan B because Elliot Anderson's plan A for Man City, isn't he? Semenyu was plan A for Man City. Gehi was plan A for Man City. You look at Arsenal. I know they've not done any business yet, but you look at what they did last summer. Whatever you think about these players, I'm not saying they're all success, but Gyökeres was plan A. Declan Rice was plan A. You know, we seem to be very, very good at signing every player that's not a plan A, B or C. Look, Sesko's done very well for us, but he wasn't plan A, B, C. Might have been D, probably was E. So, look, Somerville is better than nothing. And he will be better than whoever the next person down the list is. So I acknowledge that maybe we should get him. But what frustrates me is that, again, we're buying players that suit this football club in relation to price. And actually, you know what? We probably won't sign Somerville now. The hilarious thing is, the debate is probably irrelevant because we probably won't sign Somerville now because he scored a goal in the World Cup and other clubs will go, we like Somerville. And his price will go up from, I think we were looking at 40 to 50. It's probably going to go up to 60 now because he scored in the World Cup. Well, I don't want to pay £60 million. Not for Somerville, for me. And also, I watch football. I don't know about you lot, but I watch football beyond Manchester United. And Somerville played in a relegated West Ham side and he was okay. Just like Jared Bowen was okay. But he wasn't Yan Diamande. He wasn't Morgan Rogers. He wasn't Semenyu good. You know, he was okay. He's a decent, okay player. But he ain't bloody Yan Diamande and he ain't Semenyu. There's a very big drop-off from those two players down to him as well. So, again, I just sort of go back to what I said before. How many more OK players are we going to buy from, you know, bottom-level Premier League clubs? Because I don't think Matheus Fernandes is OK. I think Matheus Fernandes is a superstar in the making. I don't think Somerville is. And that's my issue with that. Lunda says, just like Matheus Fernandes, you mean? No, I don't think that. I think that's the simplistic argument of a moron, if I'm being honest. I think Matheus Fernandes is 21 with the potential to be as good as Elliot Anderson or Declan Rice or whoever you want to pitch it at. I think Somerville is in his mid-20s. I don't think he's going to be any better than Harvey Barnes, if I'm being completely honest. No, that's too far. I mean, Harvey Barnes is not a bad player, but I don't think you can say, well, Matheus Fernandes is from West Ham. It's like saying, you know, why did we buy Cunha from Wolves? He's no better than João Gomes. Well, he fucking is. It's like saying, well, why did we buy Mbeumo from Brentford? You know, he's no better than Jordan Henderson. Well, he is. But West Ham did get relegated. I mean, some of our fans would have us buying Diouf, bring Wan-Bissaka back, Jared Bowen, Somerville. And, I mean, there's literally a content creator out there, I've heard, who it sounds like he'd buy half the West Ham team. Because he likes Jared Bowen, he likes Somerville, he likes Matheus Fernandes, he likes Diouf, and he'd probably bring Wan-Bissaka back. I mean, that's half a relegated side. And that's my point. Like, at some point, you've got to go, why are we buying West Ham players? I genuinely have heard somebody say that. I've also heard separate people say Diouf would be a good signing, Bowen would be a good signing, I'd bring Wan-Bissaka back. Somerville would be a good signing. You know, you're buying half a relegated side. There's a reason they got relegated. And look, I'm not saying Fred says Diouf's all right. I'm not saying Diouf individually isn't a good signing for United. I'm not saying Somerville individually isn't a good signing for United. But we can't be in for three or four or five West Ham players and pretend that that's going to be a good thing for Manchester United. I personally think Diouf is a bit average, and I've said that before. I wouldn't go anywhere near Jared Bowen. Wan-Bissaka, I don't think I'd bring him back. I'd sign Matheus Fernandes in a heartbeat. And Somerville, if it's that or nothing, I would do the deal. All I'm saying is that I'm not excited by that deal because if you'd said to me in March, our winger's going to be Somerville, I would have said, well, we've gone from Semenyu to Diamande to Rogers to Somerville. I think the other three players, even though Rogers is not really a winger, I think those three players are better. I'd rather keep Rashford than sign Somerville, says Mohamed. And I think that's a point. I think that's a very relevant point. You know, would you rather have Rashford than Somerville? I don't really want to answer it because you get pinned down. But it's a point. Razzler says, update on Fernandes. You need to tune in early, mate, because the hardcore will get very, very angry with me if I start going back on Fernandes. Would you consider Sabari? Well, he's going to Bayern Munich. So if we were going to consider him, then, you know, we should have considered him by now. What I would say on the midfield is, the frustration for me, personally, I can only project that. The frustration for me is the not slowness, because it's still only the 21st of June. There's 2 and a bit months left of the window, so I can't call it slowness. I would say Emily Derry nailed it a couple of days ago when she said, we go into every transfer window with optimism, excitement and hope. And by the middle of June, the club willingly pop that optimism, destroy that hope, and leave you unexcited by what is clearly going to be another slow and pragmatic transfer window. That's my frustration. The things that compound that frustration, and it really does, and nobody's going to make me feel any better than that about this, is watching Liverpool, our biggest rival, bid 100 million euros for Diamande and then hear that they're going to bid again. Watching Man City, our City rival, who've destroyed us over the last 10 years, bid for a player that's perfect for us in Elliot Anderson. And then watching Tottenham, a club of ridicule, be more ambitious and aggressive and spend more in the window on players that we should be going for. Their frustrations. If Jason Wilcox or Omar Berada or Sir Jim Radcliffe want to have a chat about how that's irrational, I don't think they'd have a leg to stand on. And we'd probably get the truth. They'd probably say, at the end of the day, we can't compete with those clubs. And I would say, we can't compete with Spurs. So you're basically admitting we can't compete then. Because that frustrates me. And nobody's going to come in with an argument that can defeat that. You might agree with us not spending money, but you can't defeat the fact that Spurs are spending 80, 90 million pounds on Tonali and looking to buy Fernandes as well. I mean, it's illogical. It doesn't make any sense to me how they're doing that. And we're not. I don't know how they're doing it. They're not in the Champions League. I don't know why we can't compete. That frustrates me. And also what frustrates me is just getting locked into this one deal at a time sort of stuff with very slow movement on it. Because United will tell you that, you know, we're very confident that we can get Matheus Fernandes and it will take as long as it takes and we're not going to be rushed and we're not going to panic. And that's absolutely fine. They're in control. They can decide how slow they work on a deal. That's absolutely nothing to do with us. But there is a lot to do this transfer window. And every day or week you spend on Matheus Fernandes is a day or week less to spend on other deals, you know? Andy Atherton says, I touched on this yesterday on That's Football. We have Dorgu, who's a highly exciting left winger. We have Cunha, who is a different option as a left forward, and Lacey as a prospect. Why are we looking at left wingers, says Andy Atherton. I think you've answered your own question, mate. Cunha isn't a winger. Dorgu is a young, up-and-coming player who's also had a severe injury. And Lacey, as a prospect, should never be considered as part of the roster. He's a prospect. He's a bonus. So I think I think you've answered your own question, even though it's not the answer you think. I personally think Lacey, you can't count. Cunha's not a left winger. And Dorgu, one injury and you haven't got a winger. I think when you're going into the Champions League and the Premier League, you do need more squad depth than that. Brett, look, ultimately for me, we do need to bring Rashford back or we do need to buy a left winger. I don't think we have enough. The way we're going at it, it's that Newcastle from last... Brett says, the way we're going is that... I don't know whether you've wrote this well, Brett. The way we are going, it's us that are the new Newcastle from last season. You did write it well. I just couldn't get my words out. That's not necessarily my issue with this window. There is still plenty of time left. We still can get Matheus Fernandes. But as I say, the frustrating thing is we're moving slow again. I think the optimism has dissipated again. And I think that we are clearly going to get outbid for play. I mean, when Tonali signs for Spurs, if you'd said to me in March, when we were heavily linked to Tonali, Tonali will sign for Spurs and we won't even bid, I'd go, we must have signed Anderson then. No, we won't bid on that either. Right, we must be signing Bruno G then. No, he's staying at Newcastle. We must have signed Tchouaméni then. No, that's not happened either. I'd be like, what? So Tonali signed for Spurs and we haven't done anything? No. And that's, when that happens, that's going to be in my head. It's like, how the fuck have we allowed that to happen? Because I think Tonali as a replacement for Casemiro is virtually perfect. I know they're a different profile of player, but I think he's perfect. So for him to go to Spurs and strengthen a club that's like trying to catch us up, I find it a bit strange. But look, to paint a positive picture, and people will say you're drunk. Bouadi is still available. I think he's a very exciting player. Alex Scott is still available. I think he's a very exciting player. Tchouaméni is technically still available, and I think he's almost the perfect replacement for Casemiro because he replaced him at Real Madrid. And Mateus Fernandez is still a deal that United can do. So look, there's four options there. If you could get two out of those four with Ederson, you've got a good midfield. I can't sit here and say that that's not possible, because it is possible. The problem is, if I was a betting person and I had to gamble everything I own that Man United will get two out of Boadi, Mateus Fernandez, Alex Scott and Tchouaméni, I'd bet they don't. They can, but I'd bet that they won't. But it's still possible. Like, it's not like the shop's empty. There are still good midfield options out there. Patrick Lynch says, nothing against Ederson, but the more I think about it, the more I feel it's a signal of our board's intent. It's about what they think is best business rather than best players. I like Ederson, Patrick, and I think he might surprise a few people. To play devil's advocate, the one thing I think we all have to acknowledge about Ederson is that whatever happened with Ederson, we decided not to go anywhere near him for 3 years, despite him being on our books. Despite him being a player of interest, he was that interesting that we ignored it for 3 years. In fact, Ederson was that much of a priority for Man United that when he was about to sign for Atletico Madrid in January, we sat back and did nothing. So I like Ederson, and I think he might surprise a few people, but the club definitely only went for him very late. And why did they do it? I don't know. But he was literally signing for Atletico Madrid in January. And Atletico Madrid decided, we don't want to pay £40 million, so they walked. But he thought he was going to Atletico Madrid. Atalanta thought he was going to Atletico Madrid. And it just fell apart because Atletico Madrid didn't want to pay. So if he was such a priority for Man United, how come 4 months ago we didn't swoop in and stop that happening? So something changed in the last 4 months where United suddenly decided, you know what, let's go for Ederson. If it's quality over quantity, why are we not bidding on top tier players? If it's vice versa, aren't we getting three or four players in already? Could it be neither, says Alomar. Emily Derry says, I know Joel Glazer is notoriously slow at making decisions, but surely he can decide more than one thing at a time. Not holding my breath, says Emily. I mean, you can blame the Glazers for that, Emily, because they put the structure in place. The reality is, and I've asked this question before about from people in the know, why can Man United only do one deal at a time? Because they're just not competent enough to do more than one deal at a time. The people that need to be involved in the deal all focus in on one deal. They don't have the structure or the know-how to do two deals at the same time, because Wilcox, Matt Hargreaves, Berarda will all be working on Mateus Fernandez. They won't have the ability to be working on Alex Scott or anybody else at the same time. We just never have done it. So what would happen is, if Mateus Fernandez falls through or gets done, we'd then pivot onto the next deal, but we won't be working on two. You know, Arsenal did this brilliantly. Berta, the director of football, did this brilliantly, and he's done it a couple of times. So when he went into Arsenal, they basically had Gyökeres and Sesko, and they worked on both deals at the same time. So much so that neither striker knew which way Arsenal were going to go. So there was agent talks with both. There was club talks with both. And they lined them up to the point of, this is how much this is going to cost. This is how much this is going to cost. And then they made their choice. Arsenal literally worked on two deals at the same time and then made their choice. And ultimately, it probably got them a better deal on price. I'm not saying Gyökeres was a better deal than Sesko. That's not the point. But Arsenal chose Gyökeres over Sesko, having lined them both up. Imagine if we did that. Imagine if we did that with we need to buy two midfielders. Why not work on two at the same time? Rashford or Barcola, what's the best option, says Giovanni. I mean, I'd take Barcola over Rashford. Potential, age, yeah. And also, I don't believe in going back. Ineos promised they would make United a respected club again. Barcelona toying with us shows that we're less than respected than ever, says Marlow. And Elliot says, my worry is, if Fernandez goes to Madrid for over 80 million, would Madrid up the price for Tchouaméni with the current market trends? United wouldn't pay, says Elliot. I don't think they would. I think the price for Tchouaméni will be somewhere between 60 and 70 million pounds regardless. He's only got 2 years left on his contract. If he's not going to sign a new contract there and he's not really going to play, Real Madrid would look to cash in there, and I think we'd get the deal done for 60 to 70. I don't think Real Madrid... We have got quite a good relationship with Real Madrid when it comes to buying their players, and I think that they would do a deal with us, to be fair. Mr. Solo, thank you. Welcome to the Members Club. Appreciate you. Thank you very much for that. And Dawid says, before the transfer window opened, what players would you have said we need to get as a minimum?
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk. Still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Six minimum for me. Three midfielders, a left back, a backup goalkeeper, and either a left winger or a backup striker. So six minimum. I know some people would say seven or eight, but definitely those six positions. For me, it's not acceptable to come out of this window without three midfielders, a left back, and a forward of some description, whether it be a left winger or an attacker. We're just going to need it. And let's not forget, it's not just, you know, I'm not going to sit here and go, well, we got three midfielders. It's got to be, it's not just three midfielders. It's three midfielders of a certain combination. Because three midfielders could be Hayden Hackney, Carlos Baleba, and Edison. I mean, that's just shockingly shit as a balanced midfield. So it's not just three midfielders. It's the right balance. It's the Edison signing. It's the mid-tier signing. And it's the marquee signing. That's really important as well. I don't get it, says Razzler. Why do we spend well to go back into the Champions League but cut back once we qualify? One step forward, two steps back. It's the same as before Ineos. Well, exactly, Razzler. Again, you sort of answered the question, because I'm sure there'd be loads of people in the live chat or in the comments jumping in on that one to say, we've always done this. Under the Glazers, we've always done this. I mean, when Mourinho came in, we weren't in Europe and we went and got Pogba for £90 million. I can't remember the someone we bought, Harry Maguire, but certainly when we're not in Europe, we spend. When we are in Europe, we try not to spend. It's a strange Glazer tactic that has been a part of the football club for the last 13 years, where it's almost like they panic when we're not in Europe, so they go and spend the money. In fact, I think I'm right in saying that when Ten Hag came in, we weren't in Europe again. And we spent £130 million on Casemiro and Antony in the final week of the window. So we've always, as Razzler said, spent a lot of money when we're not in Europe. And then when we are in Europe, we tend not to replicate it because we go, well, we're already there. But I think now in 2026, more than any other year, this new Champions League format is so lucrative that if you are in it, you've almost got to look at how you stay in it. Because look, this time last year, Newcastle, Chelsea, Spurs, living the dream. £100 million of revenue, playing Champions League football. Ooh, we got Real Madrid, you know, we got Barcelona. This summer, you're gone. Man United and Villa have took your place. So a year in the Champions League can be, you know, out of it a year later. Five Star says, why are they taking so long? Waiting equals higher price. Thank you very much. And Ginger Red 868 says, United have got no ambition apart from building their dream stadium and ripping off the fans, and we just take it. Why? To be honest, mate, absolutely got no issue with any United fan or any United fan group. I just think when it comes to protests or Glazer out movements or unhappiness or anything like that, stadium being knocked down, I just think there's a general acceptance in the fan base that there's nothing we can do. We are the victim of whatever this ownership decides to do, good or bad. It either works with them or it crashes down with them. But there's, you know, we're powerless. The only thing I think that's not what today is about. The only thing that changes that, I think, is if it's a little bit like politics, isn't it? You know, if you've got a party or a leader that's not very good and you want them out, your only option really is when the election comes along. But if there's not a viable alternative, a lot of people will stick with what they've got. And at United, there's just no viable alternative. So you can say, where's the protests? Where's this, that? Where's this, that, and other? There's no other option. I think if you know, if Elon Musk walked forward, or another multi-billionaire, and said, I want Man United, I'm going to make it the greatest club in the world, I think the protests would come back. I think there would be a movement, but there is no alternative. So that's why it's quiet on that front. And, you know, maybe one day it will happen, maybe one day it won't happen. But, many of us have always said that if a viable billionaire came along, you'd get into all the fan groups and United Stand and all and everybody and say, look, backers, supporters, it's going to be a bumpy ride, but we'll get them out together. But there is nothing like that coming down the line. What do you think of Mazraoui considering retirement, says Henry? I don't know whether that's true or not. I think he's sort of like looking at his life, and obviously he's very religious. I think he's looking at his life and, you know, planning for life beyond football. And, you know, that's absolutely fine. I don't think he's going to retire. I think it's national duty as well, isn't it? I don't think it's club football. But, you know, I think that Carrick doesn't even pick Mazraoui. So ultimately, I really do rate him. But we are talking about a player that ultimately is a bench player for Man United. And Man United might look to sell him at some point in the next year or two anyway. Which I don't mind. I mean, I do rate Mazraoui. But if the manager must be backed. And that's on sales as well as incomings. Ray Carl Brown, I hope you're, Amore says, I hope you're doing well. I hope you're doing well. I would only take Somerville as squad option, not a first team player, which is option A. Thank you, Ray. Hope you're doing well. And Rajav says, I cannot comprehend how one of the best midfielders in the Premier League at 26 is going to a club that finished 17th back to back. What the fuck, Tonali? But in fairness to Tonali, are we bidding for him? I'm sure Tonali sat there going, if Man United bid for me, I'd go. If Man City bid for me, I'll go. If Arsenal bid for me, I'll go. If they don't, I'm going to Tottenham. I very much guarantee that is the situation. It is not Tonali's fault he's signing for Spurs and not Man United. It's Man United's fault. It's our lack of ambition, you know? Ludicrously, we have a negotiation team who have to negotiate upwards with the ownership and down with the selling club simultaneously, and they do a poor job at both. No wonder we go cheap and slow, says Emily Derry. And Dirty Deed says, Sir Jim Ratcliffe said they learned from owning Nice. They have never bought a player over 23 million euros and no marquee ever. Can we learn anything from that? Mate, absolutely. Look, I've never heard anybody counter what I'm about to say, but so Jim Ratcliffe did an interview very near the start and spoke about not wanting to buy players of high value anymore, and spoke about not paying silly wages anymore. Whether we like it or not, the evidence stacks up that we don't want to buy players over £80 million and we don't want to pay people over £200,000 a week. And it seems to me that we're following that model, because... well, who have we done that's done that? I mean, we haven't bought a player over £80 million since Ineos came in, and we haven't given anybody a wage over £200,000 a week either. So I think that when that's been adhered to on every recruitment made so far under Ineos, it's pretty fair to assume that that's the parameters that we're operating to. Well, that prevents you signing Tonali, because he's going to be on over £200,000 a week and he's going to cost more than £80 million. That prevents you signing Diamande, because he's going to be over £80 million. That prevents you from signing Elliot Anderson, because it's going to be over that thing. So we can almost... I mean, look, I personally think we can also say we don't buy players over 26. In our recruitment, we're quite easy to predict. And also, if I'm a selling club... If we as fans know we're not going to buy people over 26, we're not going to pay over £200,000 a week, and we're not going to pay over £80 million, if we know that as fans, you can guarantee selling clubs know it as well. If they don't want to sell to us because Man United come in for one of their players, you just say the price is £80 million. I think United have made it so obvious what our limits are, you may as well write it out on Carrington, on the gate. I think it's very obvious that we, and I think that's poor ownership, by the way. I don't think Sir Jim Ratcliffe ever should have said that, but I'm pretty sure he did say words to that effect, and we've certainly adhered to it ever since. So, you know, most decent players are going to cost you more than 80 million. Most game changers are going to cost you more than 80 million. Most marquee signings are going to cost you more than 80 million pounds, aren't they? In today's market, they are. Because Caicedo went for 100 million a few years ago. Harry Maguire went for 80 million pounds 7 years ago. God's sake, Anthony went for 80 million pounds. You know, so I think that we're ruling. Look, it goes back to what I said before. Why do we keep buying players from Brentford and Wolves and West Ham? Well, it's pretty obvious when you think about it, because they're not going to cost more than 70 million pounds. We're fishing in a pond where the top teams very rarely fish, because we have to go to the West Hams and the Wolves and the Brentfords for their best players because they won't cost more than 70 million quid. Whereas if you go to the Dortmunds and the Leipzigs and the top players, you're going to pay over 80 million pounds. Look, I'd love to be wrong on that. I'd love to go live tomorrow and say Man United have swooped in and took Diamande from Leipzig for 100 million package, or, you know, Anderson for 120 million package, or Tonali for a 90 million package. But sadly, I think we're quite predictable. And sadly, that pops excitement because we can sort of predict. Look, somebody will come into the show tomorrow and they'll say, Ryerson did really well against Norway. He's had a great season for Dortmund. He's only going to cost about 25 million pounds. We should go for him. Instantly, 75% of the chat would say, well, he's over 26. We won't go for him. And they'd be right. They'd be right. And, you know, we might watch the Spain game later and maybe Pedri's fell out with Barcelona and he's available for 100 million quid. We should go and get him. Well, we won't because he's over 80 million pounds. So it's not as exciting when you know the parameters that United are working to. And I think we have set those parameters. Now, I don't think any intelligent ownership sets those parameters anyway. I don't think Arsenal would say we're not buying a player over 26. I don't think Man City would say we're not paying a player over 200 grand a week anymore. And I don't think Liverpool would say we're not buying players over 80 million pounds anymore. We've set three. Not over 26, not over 200 grand a week, not over 80 million pounds. That's incredible for a high-level sports team to do that, by the way. But we have. The reasons we've done it are financial. We don't want people over 26 because there's no resale value. We don't want to pay over 200 grand a week because it brings the wage bill down. And we don't want to pay over 80 million pounds because it saves us money. So I mean, look, we can't act surprised. We sacked half our workforce and we didn't do it for a laugh. So Jim Radcliffe didn't call in every member of staff from United, you know, with a bottle of champers going, oh, I don't know. Oh, yes, you can stay. Oh, no, you can't. Like, they got rid of them to save money. Everything we do has an understandable core. Like, they're not doing it for a laugh. They're not paying 80 million pounds plus because they're knobs. They're paying it because they want to save money. They're not giving out big wages because they're, you know, knobheads. It's because they want to save money. But does running a successful football club go hand in hand with these parameters? Well, we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see, won't we? Rob says, it feels like Ineos have no autocracy and are completely under the Glazer shadow. Well, look, Rob, I think, as we said the other night, some people forget that the Glazers run the football club. I think Ineos are trying to play Moneyball, says Razzler. Yeah, I do. I think it's a fantastic a fantastic film. And Data Dean from the Formula One team is Jonah Hill, I suppose, if you've ever seen that fantastic film. I do think United are trying to hit a Moneyball. But the funny thing is, we're not the only ones. Brighton have been doing this for years. Lots of other clubs are trying to do this now. So even if we're successful, it's going to be very hard to be successful when loads of other clubs are already following a Moneyball system. Vantic says, I think United may overpay for Somerville and underpay for Fernandes. This way, West Ham won't have to share as much with Southampton due to sell-on. Whoa. See, that's intelligence. That's intelligent, Vantic. I, you know what? Low-key, that could be one of the comments of the year. I'd not thought about that. So, basically, West Ham are trying to pump the price up for Fernandes because there's a sell-on clause to Southampton. If Man United come in and say, look, we're not going to give you 80 million for Fernandez, but we'll give you 60, and then we'll give you 60 for Somerville. You get another 15 more for Somerville into your pocket than what he's worth. We might do that. We might do that. We might not be clever enough to do that, but we might do that. It's not a bad idea. Jordan says, Mark, me and my mate were debating this, but would you rather get a tier two midfielder in Yan Diamande or a tier one midfielder in Somerville? I'd like to be part of that debate, Jordan, because you do realise I need two more midfielders and Yan Diamande or Somerville. Like, it's not about the tier. I need two more midfielders beyond Edison. So if it's two midfielders and Yan Diamande, or it's two midfielders and Somerville, Yan Diamande. If it's one more midfielder and Yan Diamande, or it's two more midfielders and Somerville, Somerville. I have got to get two midfielders. Absolutely have to. Rajaf says, the Glazer tactic ensures mediocrity and cash. And Santos says, hi, Mark, just joined, might have missed it. Looking at Enmecha for Germany, looks a great prospect. Any news or thoughts? Literally spoke about him at the start of the show. I'd say he's on United's list, but pretty low down. I don't think it will happen, but he may well end up going to Real Madrid anyway. Nish says, why are United not going for Tonali? Too expensive for us, but not too expensive for Spurs. There we are. Is signing two players from a relegated side wise, says Rajaf? I don't think it is, but it doesn't mean it won't work. Michael says, it's all about the new stadium. Right, on Somerville, would you be happy signing Somerville? 51% say yes, 49% say no. That's what you call a split. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in this morning. Really appreciate you, as always. We are back with an 8 o'clock show tonight. The flagship show of the United Stand is at 8 o'clock. I am doing the Spain game on World Cup watch-alongs today, which, correct me if I'm wrong, is a 6 o'clock kickoff. So we'll be straight after that onto the United Stand. Looking forward to that. Somebody just said it's not 6 o'clock, it's 5 o'clock. Well, we'll be live at 5 o'clock on That's Football then. Take care, everybody. Make sure you smash a like on the video and you subscribe. I'm sure at some point it's going to kick off in this window, but not at the moment. Take care. Stay safe. I'll read your comments in a bit. Thanks for watching.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.